Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to another installment of a beautiful podcast. How you doing? I am, tired. What a week. It's been insane. I was asked at the very last minute last week to do the day two keynote for the Reactive Summit, for which I was also the MC, and I agreed. Of course I agreed, because I'm plucky, Well, that, and I love the community, so why wouldn't I? But I wanted to show in the keynote some of the opportunities for integration. That is to say, not just of technologies, which is obvious; it's a sort of a de facto standard after all. But also communities, right? Because we're aligned around the same concepts and we have the same frame of reference for thinking about solutions, we can do interesting things together, right? And so I wanted to work with somebody else. I didn't want it to just be the Josh Show, so I invited my friend, the legendary James Ward. He's a developer advocate over at Google and a frequent guest on this very show, and one of the best names in the industry to talk about these kinds of things. I invited him to be my co-presenter. And now, mind you, he was en route to London for the DevOps UK conference, at which I also had a talk, by the way. It's a 3-hour workshop. So thanks to everybody who turned up for that. And he was great. I was like, hey, you want to do this keynote with me? He's like, sure. And I was like, well, and he's like, when? I was like, well, it's this, you know, next week. So he's like, oh, okay, well, that'll be a little harder. And it turned out, as it happened, that our presentation, the keynote, would have been exactly at exactly the same time as he was due to be giving a workshop in London, right? Live, in person, right? Which is not great, right? So we had to do a pre-recorded thing. And we did. It was fun. We worked, 36 hours, basically, leapfrogging each other in terms of sleep, because he's 8 hours ahead of me here in sunny San Francisco, California, in the U.S. And eventually, we got it to the point where it was like good enough. And then it's like, okay, well, we have to pre-record it. So I figured I'll just pre-produce it a little bit, throw in some green screen, special effects, get our picture in there, some titles, some whatever, just get it to the point where it looked a little bit more than just a QuickTime screencast, you know. And it certainly wasn't. By the time we had gotten it produced down to the length, more or less, that they wanted, it had, you know, represented quite a bit of editing and post production. But even that, we were figuring we'll just do all this cool stuff, and we did. Then I tried to export it. Now, mind you, this is the first edit, the first video I've cut. Since upgrading Creative Cloud, Adobe Creative Cloud to Adobe Creative Cloud 2022, which was, it was a mistake. Mistakes were made. That wasn't great. I shouldn't have done that. I should have just stayed on Adobe Creative Cloud 2021, because it just busted sideways. A 30-minute video ended up taking like 6 hours to export without any of the special effects, without any of the picture-in-picture, just the basic like 1080p screencast, which I would have done. You know, I do this once a week. I have a Spring Tips series, which is a pre-produced video that I do every week. And, you know, a 20-minute video takes 40 minutes to export. And that's considered really slow in the non-linear timeline editor-based community, right? If you use something else like DaVinci Resolve or Final Cut Pro, those are markedly faster. But still, it's at worst 2x, right? Like that's what you're expecting, is 20 minutes becomes 40 minutes, not 5 or 6 hours for the most basic thing with nothing in there except for some screencast, you know. It was a nightmare. And I when I tried to export with all the effects and all that, oh wow, yeah, it was said, you know, basically it was like, well, if you start now, you might have it by the end of tomorrow, which is, you know, most of the day after the keynote was supposed to air. So we did all that work, and then I was like, we just gotta disable all that. You know, we hid all that and just exported the basic screencast with our voices. It was scary. I mean, I've since figured out that I'm pretty sure that the issue is that it's 2022. So I rolled back to 2021, and that's how I was able to finally cut yesterday's Spring Tips installment. But even that took like an hour and a half, and I'm not sure what all happened there. I don't know. It was whatever. It's like an hour and 20 minutes. It wasn't so bad. It was just, it's not good. Not good right now. I'm not sure what's going on with Adobe's Creative Cloud. I don't like it. I want it to stop. Anyway, so James, we did this talk about, you know, how you could take a Spring application that uses these nice reactive ecosystem technologies like RSocket and R2DBC and Spring, of course, and then you could use that and then talk to something like, you know, we built a GraphQL endpoint and then consume that in a type-safe, functional way using ZIO and Scala, right? And that was even cooler, right? Like, that's a different thing. It's not a reactive streams implementation per se, but the concepts are the same. We were both talking about the same thing. The capabilities are the same, at least insofar as our ability to build something that talks to another system in a reliable, scalable fashion is concerned, right? I just thought that was really cool. It was really good. And so the talk was called you know, reactive streams here and there, right? Like the idea is that over time we've gone to from a place where it was the niche to use reactive streams to the point where now today languages proper are integrating reactive streams into their, you know, into their JDK or to their SDKs or whatever. The default assumption now is asynchronous IO. That has since proliferated, right? All languages now have some, well, except for Java, of course, but all languages now have some sense of async await or something like that. Kotlin has coroutine, so that's interesting. And of course, we've got a proliferation of different libraries or frameworks that let you think and work in terms of these concepts, right? The idea of a template or a pipeline whose individual state transitions are they're inert until you activate them. In the reactive streams world, that means subscribing to them, right? To go from a cold to a hot stream. So it's just a lot of fun. I hope people get to see the replay of that. And I want to thank James Ward again. Name a better friend to have in a pinch than James Ward. I dare you. I defy you. He was amazing. Just what a mensch. So thank you so much, James, for, as usual, exceeding the line of duty, you know. Thank you, not at all, Adobe, for one of the worst days I've ever had working on video editing. You know, I'm actually at a point now where I can cut a video of like an hour, and you know, it'll take me 2 hours, right? I can go through it, edit it, cut it, and then get it exported in another 2 hours. And so it doesn't take that long, right? It takes me an hour of recording and then 2 hours to edit, and then maybe another hour or whatever to export it. That should be the entire thing, right? I can do that after lunch and before dinner for most videos that I do, for most Spring Tips videos. This was obscene. I mean, it was absurd. I couldn't believe they would break it this badly and then call it GA. It was very, very PHP of them. I don't know why they would do that, but please don't do it again. It's just not great. All right. So that's just me. You can feel free to ignore all that. It's not great. But today's guest is great. Absolutely legendary. Today is Linda Vanderpoel. She is the founder of JDuchess, which is a advocacy group for women in the Java ecosystem. She is also a prominent member of the DevOps for Kids initiative, which is a advocacy group basically for kids in software, right? And all these things are, I appreciate these things so much. And I obviously I'm guilty as anybody, I suppose, well, not anybody, but I'm guilty as a lot of us are, of not doing enough to support that community, those efforts. Goodness knows we need them. Like it's been shown that it's a competitive advantage to have a more representative, more typical arrangement or grouping of people in your organization, in your teams, etc. You actually get better results, right? So it's not just like we should have more women and teach more kids just because it's a nice thing to do. It's actually better for you. It's better to have that. The more diverse the team, the better the product. It's been shown time and time again, and the more money you make, right? So I don't know how we have to have this discussion, but if you don't want to have it in terms of just, you know, what's the moral thing to do, what's the nice wholesome thing to do, then you need to have it in terms of what do you want for your organization? Do you want to succeed in the marketplace? If so, we need more women. We need more young people to be interested in software, and we need to have a more diverse mix of people in the ecosystem. So I really appreciate these kinds of things because I want our community to thrive. I want our community to become bigger and better and to be first in what's the right term? First in class, I guess, right? Like we can do this. We are so great in so many ways. So imagine if we were just a little bit more, okay, a lot more diverse, you know? And so I really appreciate efforts like this. I really appreciate Linda Vanderpoel. I really appreciate that she took the time to come on the show and educate me. And I learned so much. And that's – I don't normally do my homework before I do these podcasts because a lot of times I either know enough to know what I don't know, which is good enough for a podcast discussion. I can ask questions and we can fumble my way through the – through the darkness from there, or I do know, in which case I don't want to, you know, I'd just rather learn the delta from the source rather than, you know, closing whatever gap I have by myself because that takes all the fun out of it. And then there's no more surprises in the interview, right? So, but for this one, I just wanted to be, I actually did research. A lot of it confirmed what I already had vaguely understood, you know, but, and despite that, I still ended up learning some cool stuff. So it's just a great episode. This has got to be one of my favorite episodes. I hope you enjoy it. This one's not super long, actually. That's the other thing is, it's one of those episodes where big things come in small run times, you know, it's a good episode. It's one of my favorites. Go, please enjoy, enjoy. You'll have fun. You'll feel better. You can do things to help people, globally, right? There's like, I'm all about wearing a mask and supporting one of these organizations. It seems like if we do that, we can help our local optimum a little bit. You know, we can improve our local optimum a little bit, our Pareto efficiency levels a little bit, and help the world. So, okay, enjoy. And as always, we'll talk to you. You heard that, right? You're being recorded?
Yes. Okay.
All right.
I did. Unfortunately, also heard it when you were still talking to James. I was like, okay, let's mute my microphone then.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Because, okay. So, oh, that's awkward. I didn't even think about that. What are the GDPR implications of that? If somebody accidentally comes into, you were on time, we were running late. If somebody else comes into a meeting where everybody has assented to being recorded, but then you accidentally barge into the meeting.
On the other hand, I mean, if you know that it's going for a podcast, you know you're being recorded, right?
Yeah, but still, like,
so
yeah,
it's okay, sort of an implicit consent before you even open the meeting, because why else would you be there?
Yeah. Oh, that's true, though. But still, okay, I'm sorry about that. I didn't. That's a very interesting question. I don't know what the lawyers would say about that. You know, it was an accident. I don't think I did anything wrong, probably, you know, like if I did, it's a system that's designed to fail, you know, which I don't like. All right. So cool. We did it though, despite my, technical, and scheduling issues, we did it. We're here. Would you introduce yourself so I don't butcher it? Just tell the community who you are and, you know,
hi, my name is Linda van der Poel. I'm a Java developer, as you might well know, or not if you don't know me. I'm a Java champion. I'm the founder of the Duchess Network for Java, female Java developers. And I've spoken at some conferences at some times, but.
Some, yeah. legend. I would have, to give myself a little bit of credit, I probably would have said those same things about you as well. So that's, I would have emphasized that you've been at a lot of conferences. But you also do DevOps for kids and other things as well that are sort of like, they're a conference, but they're not the same. When people say I speak at conferences, you do that a lot. But there's also this other thing, which is even cooler, which is helping the youth, you know?
Yes.
Very, very cool. Okay, so I don't even know where to start. Obviously, how long have you been a Java champion? Like, it just feels like.
I've lost count, actually. Because at some point, Yolande, who was then working at Oracle, asked me, would you like to be a Java champion? And I looked at the list of requirements and I was like, But I don't fill those requirements.
Oh.
It's the typical, I'm a woman, so I have to comply with all of them, right?
Right.
Misunderstanding that, no, you don't. You just need a couple.
Yeah. And
so then some of my fellow duchesses did become Java champion, and I didn't.
Oi.
And then great. I think probably a year later or something, they nominated me after all.
Yeah. Well, I am on the, as you know, like I'm routinely, a common refrain on that list where we nominate people is, wait, that person's not already Java champion. It's just a weekly thing. Like we nominate somebody and we're all like, huh? Like, it's just obvious this person should have been one from the get go, you know? Were you made a Java champion before 2015 or after?
I think before, but I'd have to look it up.
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, I don't remember your particular nomination. So it could have been, I just don't remember, or it could be it came before 2015, before which I was not a JC, but I'm sure it would have been one of those head scratching, like, wait, what? You know, because I've known of you, not you personally. I mean, we've talked ever so briefly at different conferences, but I've known of your awesome work for a long, long time, right? Long time. So I think the thing for which I most identify you is J Duchess, right? Like this is unique. It's wonderful. It's a thing that we needed in all ecosystems. And the Java ecosystem is certainly no different. If maybe it's, you know, perhaps we even need it more here, you know. Can you explain it?
Way back when I was still a wee little developer, a junior developer, I came to conferences to learn more, and I noticed there were a few women out there. Not many, but a few. I was like, you know, it would be really cool to get to know these other women, but I'm an introvert and I'm shy. You wouldn't tell it anymore these days because I've learned to cope. But back then I was really, really shy. And all these women were surrounded by men, naturally, always talking to everybody else. And I couldn't get in. So I thought, you know what? It would be really cool if I had this network with t-shirts and everything. So then I would have to talk to them and I would have an opening line. I would have something to talk about. So after I thought of that, I was like, okay, I need a name. So, well, Duke is the mascot. So the natural extension of that is Duchess. So the very first event after that was the Masters of Java. And there were three other women there. And I talked to them about it during lunch and said, hey, what do you think of my idea? And they all loved it. So a few weeks later, we had an official first Duchess meeting. And the other ladies had invited some other women from their company as well. And we discussed it and we said, well, I wanted to make Duchess also a pun on Dutch. And I wanted to put a T in there. And they were like, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't, because what if we ever go international? Then it's not a pun on Dutch anymore. And we want to be inclusive. So we decided not to and made up a logo and made T-shirts. And I think it was about 6 weeks later that we had Brazilian members. It just blew up.
Yeah.
And straight from the beginning, I already said, well, I don't know what other communities need. I mean, I have a clue for the Netherlands because that's where I am, but I don't know what they need in France or Brazil or whatever. So let's not make any actual rules other than we're for women. We're trying to promote this to get more women involved and to build a community. And so every chapter all over the world has their own rules. So some chapters are very strictly no men allowed, and others are, well, let's gather before a meeting of a local jug and then go there together.
Yeah. So are these typically run as like the equivalent of like a charity, or are they just
I think it's mostly we're actually just jugs.
Cool. Oh, that's so cool.
And sometimes we're very separate because in the Netherlands we have our own events. And in France, as I said, they have their meeting, a social meeting before a jug event.
Right. That's awesome. So it's a visible way for people to network with others in their community.
Yeah.
That they wouldn't otherwise have had access to, yeah. Right? And that's it happens to be along the lines of, you know, helping women, right? Which is, it's an underserved part of the community. It deserves a little bit of help, right? Obviously. So that's great. And then I noticed that there's a presence at different conferences, right?
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Well, for me, I go to a lot of conferences anyway, and especially in the beginning, it was a bit of like a Pokemon game. Gotta catch them all. So I have to talk to all the women.
Right.
Ask them, do you know about Duchess yet? And because I also go to international conferences, we quickly had more chapters in other countries also. But typically I wear my Duchess shirt, sometimes even Duchess necklace that I had custom made. And we're just out there walking around, being participants mostly. And yeah. Talking to more people to introduce them to Duchess. Sometimes we've had an actual little booth because they had, I think the JFOL once had it, where they had little tables for jugs, for the smaller jugs in the Netherlands to present themselves.
Yeah. So this is a podcast, so unfortunately, it won't do much to help improve your the ability of people to recognize you by face. But one thing that's a telltale, people already know you, but for the two people that don't, the one thing they could look for is you have those shirts you just described have the cutest picture of like Lady Duke or Duke, it's like
Duchess.
Duke, yes. Duchess, yeah.
It's Duke with a bow tie.
It's so, oh no, with a hair, not a bow tie. A bow tie is like a.
Oh yeah, well.
Yeah, like a bow on her.
It's a bow tie, but in your hair.
Yeah, in your hair. It's so cute. It's like, it's adorable. Yeah, just look for that. And if it's some conferences, you know, depending on what they're talking about, it might be the only smile you get that whole day, you know, like, so look for that t-shirt. And it's ubiquitous, right? I have I think there's stickers. I don't know. I have a t-shirt.
So far, I think I've seen shirts, buttons, stickers. And at some conferences, we will actually have a banner somewhere.
That's awesome. It's so can people, like, what does it mean to join? Do they just look for their local?
So try to find your local chapter and see what they're organizing. If they're organizing something, you can probably find most of them on Meetup.
Yeah.
And if you can't find a chapter, just start one yourself. I mean, find me on Twitter as Duchess Founder, and I'll help you set it up if there's a need for that.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. So they could find you on the Twitter, and they can set up their own, right? That would be a very good idea. Oh, that's so cool. Like that's
and it doesn't even have to be a lot of work. I mean, you just find a couple of women, find a place to have a meeting, and just do it.
Yeah.
Have some drinks, or even find a company to make us sponsor you and give me have technical meetings there or whatever.
Yeah. I like, and it's a great networking opportunity. I like that. Yeah. I like it a lot, you know. In this community, obviously, we don't have enough diversity, right? It's true for the whole world, and in particular for the Java community, that's true, right? And so we can always do better.
I think for most Java conferences, the number of women attending is
not great.
If you're lucky, between 5 and 10%. I think 10% will be the most I've ever seen.
Oh, well. Okay, so there are some exceptions. Have you ever seen the Morocco DevOps Morocco?
I've not had the privilege of going there yet.
They were I forget the numbers, but it was like 40% or whatever. They're very, very specific about like how they really went out of their way to open that door. But that was, I remember that being as like a salient exception, not the rule, yeah. You know, and like I don't know why, because it's anecdotally, and again, this is not, there's no science here. This is just me with my own eyes, my own dumb eyes, my lying eyes. Anecdotally, I've noticed that you tend to find a bit more representation in some countries in Asia, right? And I don't know why that is, because it's those very same countries are not necessarily more inclusive.
Generally. No, but when I just started Duchess, I looked into a lot of research and stuff, and yeah. I noticed there were lots of articles saying that in the East,
yeah,
it's seen as a typical women's job because you can do it from home. So you can combine it with your family more easily. Or at least that's what the articles claimed.
Well, that's horrible. I hope that's not what it is. It's probably, it makes me so sad.
It might have been that's what started it. I don't know.
Well, that's horrible. but at least, I guess the only silver lining to come out of that is that I've gone to conferences in like Taiwan and India and so on. And there's a lot more women. It's notable. You notice there's more women there. I don't know if it's half yet, but it's certainly more than I would expect in the West, in the US or Europe. And again, anecdotal. I don't know anything. I could be completely wrong, or it could be because of some horrible misunderstanding of why people should get into the field that you just described. That could very truly be the possibility there. But anyway, yeah.
And I've actually noticed that all of the prejudice around women not being able to program, they're still out there.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah.
Right to this day. And I've also organized DevOps for Kids meetups where parents bring their son and then take their daughter away again. And we were like, what, she's not staying? Oh, she can? Well, duh.
But yeah. Oh, that's horrible.
And I think that year I don't remember if we still had a spot left that we could just pull her in, or if we actually were sold out and had to send her home. I don't remember.
Oh, that's horrible. And that's a great point, right? Which is J Duchess seeks to provide a place for people who are inclined into the community, into the Java community and so on, to sort of gather and organize. But there would be more of them inclined if we weren't prejudiced as children, right? Is that fair?
Yeah.
So we need to fix the problem at the root, you know? So DevOps Kids is a great way to fix that, right?
There have even been DevOps for Girls editions.
Yes.
That were specifically aimed at girls.
That would be great. First of all, before you, I'm about to ask you to explain DevOps for Kids, but before that, I would just like to say that my daughter, she's over the pandemic, she's gotten pretty, she's better than I am, but she's not like finished, you know what I'm saying? She hasn't gotten to a point where she's like going to go get a job or whatever. But she's been learning how to do programming and doing different things and stuff like that. And so this is during the pandemic though. So I would have, like, had it been before the pandemic, I would have loved to have taken her to one of these, events, you know. That's great. She's 16 and I can't wait to see what she does with that amazing brain of hers. Okay. So what is DevOps for Kids?
DevOps for Kids is a brainchild of the organizer of DevOps itself, because his son at some point said, well, you're always organizing these cool events for adults, but never for me. And so he said, let's fix that. And he organized the first DevOps for Kids, where they have several workshops to teach kids at least the rudiments of programming.
Yeah.
So they might be workshops with Minecraft is a very popular one. Sometimes they even have a NOW that they can program.
Right.
Or Lego Mindstorms or Scratch lots and lots of materials there already. And then very quickly he decided, well, we don't scale very well. And there's so many kids out there. And because they're kids, you need a lot more people to help out with the workshops, because you need like one volunteer per, well, four, maybe five kids, depending on the age. And usually it's about, I think, 10 to 14, something like that.
Yeah.
Because that's the age where they can do things on their own and can read and write perfectly. And that helps with typing.
Yeah.
And so he decided to work on open source it. That's the one. So they built a website for it, put all the materials they had out there and said, well, there are a couple of rules you have to adhere to before you can call yourself DevOps for Kids. One of them being, if you make any new material, you put it back into the community.
Yeah.
And well, we very quickly adopted that idea for Duchess. And I think the first year we asked a bunch of companies to sponsor us for a small amount. And then quickly figured out, you know what? It's a lot easier if one company sponsored all of it, can put their name to it, you know, as a commercial thing.
Branding exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we can teach them how to do it. And next year they can do it themselves. So we don't have to do it anymore.
Right.
So I helped out a couple of years. And now mostly it's run by other Dutch companies in the Netherlands anyway.
That's amazing. That's a wonderful. So, DevOps for Kids is, you need money to run the local installations. What about JDuchess? Do they take, how does that work? Does each one kind of like pool money together? Or do they take a sponsorship or what?
I think it varies from chapter to chapter. Mostly yeah. we are sponsored in space and food.
Yeah.
And not so much. And we've had a couple of sponsors who sponsored money, and we used to have a bank account, and then, you know, the bank account actually only cost money. So we stopped it again.
Yeah. That's wonderful. So if people wanted to sponsor something that literally has no other function but to bring more people to a place where they would probably see your ads, whatever, they could reach out to you and offer space or resources. Yeah. Okay. Like how could you not want to sponsor that? You know?
Yeah. I don't think we've ever had a no. We've had companies asking us, what can we do for you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah. I just want more people to ask, you know, I want more companies to ask. That'd be great. So how does it work in the era of the pandemic? Right. I mean, what does space look like?
You can't
see people there.
Due to the pandemic, I've not had a lot of energy, and I'm one of the driving forces in the Netherlands. So we've had one workshop because one of my colleagues, Duchess colleagues, that is not work colleagues.
Yeah.
Her company said, well, we can host a workshop, and she'd found somebody to give us a presentation.
Yeah.
And what they did was they gave us all a voucher for one of those food ordering companies.
Uber Eats or something, DoorDash.
Yeah, something like that, but the Dutch version of it. And so we could all just order food, have it brought to our home, and then we would sit behind our cameras and eat and then have a presentation afterwards. That was really cool.
That is cool. That is so cool. Yeah. Okay. So it is possible to do it.
Data
just online. That's what I'm saying. Like, it would be cool if you had like a, you know, DevOps online. But
it still takes a bit of organizing because you have to find somebody who is willing to host that and sponsor the food, although you can do it without food, of course.
Sure.
And then you just have to find some speaker and a way to have a Zoom license or something or some other service that you can use.
That's amazing. That's so good. Okay, you're making the world a better place. I know that, and I'm hoping people will contribute. You know, obviously there's no it's not like the problem is solved. It's getting better, but it's a journey that has 1,000 steps, you know, or 1,000 miles rather. So What's the thing that people can do? Like how do they get started with, do we want more JDuchess chapters? I guess we do, right? That's never a bad thing.
Nope, I would love to.
Right. And do they reach out? Is there a website they can go to? Where do they start? You know, what's their
journey? I think the best way is to reach out to me on Twitter, because we used to have a website and something went wrong and it went down and we've not actually had the energy to fix it for years now.
Well, if somebody wanted to help with that, would you be willing to indulge that person's help?
Well, the problem we have right now is that we have the URL is hosted by one person and the website was supposed to be hosted by another person. And it's not their fault because we just haven't been able to set it up right yet. And yeah, it's complicated. But I think we'll probably be part of another website at some point.
Okay. So JDUCHESS.
Yes.
That's the Twitter handle.
It's Duchess Founder.
Oh, you're okay. That's sorry. Am I looking at the wrong Twitter handle? Let me see. Duchess.
Is there a JDuchess Twitter handle?
Yeah. PDX. It's the. Oh, it says Amsterdam, though. What is that? It's even got a link to the website there. There's a lot of these. If you look for JDuchess, you'll find all around the world in different languages and all that stuff. Brazilian.
I've long ago lost count and lost track of how many chapters there are because just let it go.
That is so great. That'd be very interesting if you had like a website where all that stuff was kind of added to a single place for people to... start. Oh, that's so cool. So which one is yours then? So JDuchess.
I'm Duchess Founder without the J.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Duchess Founder. No space or anything?
No space. Well, no, it's a Twitter handle, so no spaces.
Okay, there we go. Duchess Founder. Oh, wow. Yeah, that is, I'm glad I asked. Normally it's like, okay, when I have a podcast guest, I say, oh, this is the person's name. And here's the thing on which he or she works. Go find it. It'll be easy, right? But there's so many different duchesses out there that I'm glad we had that disambiguation moment. That's so cool. I like, okay, so they can start new chapters. They can you also work with DevOps for Kids, which is there's that one's I've kind of like, now that I'm home more. There's never a good excuse, but my excuse used to be I wasn't home very often. And so it would make no sense for me to commit to doing one in my local city because I was in my local city for like less than a month a year. Right. So, and then the pandemic kept me home.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what life in the future looks like, but I hope it's some combination of I'm home enough to do something consistently, but also able to fly out if I need to, because there's no pandemic,
And the thing is with DevOps for Kids, it's usually a 1-day event.
Yeah.
So it will take some organizing to get started, to get it all organized, but it's only 1 day. So it doesn't have to be recurring.
Yeah. Oh, that's I like it when it's, those events are fun.
They are totally exhausting, but so much fun.
Yeah. So much fun. That epiphany of seeing people go, oh, I get it now, And I know it's a cliche, but I think kids really do learn surprisingly quickly, really quickly.
Well, and most of the workshops have been set up to allow them to learn that quickly.
Right. And there's great content created by world-class people.
Yeah.
And it's just it doesn't matter. It's, let's say your skill isn't developing a demo or a presentation. That's okay. That's world-class presentations and demos.
I've had testers helping who knew nothing about coding, helping me volunteer at DevOps for Kids, because what they did is ask the right questions of the kids.
Right.
To help them along.
So amazing. Oh, that's so good. And those, people can participate in that if they want. They can just get the resources and proctor an event at their local community. And then JDuchess, of course, if there isn't an event, they can create a new one and they should. And if there is an event, then go, absolutely. Just make yourself visible. There's a vibrant community. And one thing I'm looking, just now I'm looking on Twitter, I'm just looking for all these different duchesses. And there's Jade Duchin, whatever the plural of that is. There's Jade Duchesses all around the planet. I see representation here in Africa and Asia and of course Europe and the US, right? That's, you know, I don't see, I'm sure there's others in Australia and maybe even in Antarctica. You know, that's where we got to go next.
That would be awesome.
So cool. Awesome. This is great. I really appreciate you taking your very, very precious time to help walk me through all this stuff. I just really like, I like that there's this energy out there. It's better for the world. It really is. It's better for everybody if this gets better. I hope after this horrible pandemic, you know, you know, it would be nice to come back to a room that's half, you know, it's 50-50 women and men, but
that would be awesome.
So we're not going to get there. Yeah, exactly. This event, this kind of thing is, it's Java centric, right? It's JVM centric. That's the theory, right? But, you know, can programmers who are not Java programmers come and hang out? I mean,
sure, I've even had a Scrum workshop at one point, so why not?
Yeah, there you go.
I very early on decided to make it JVM centric because you've got to focus somewhere.
Sure.
Yeah. And there's plenty of women's networking groups out there already, but that's actually only just networking, and I like to share my passion.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And we have in the Java Champions, this is the thing we were talking about the Java Champions earlier, which is also a group that could use a lot more diversity. Obviously, it's, you know, I know we're working on it. It's just not where it could be, right? It's not where it should be. It's not where it could be. But one thing I noticed is that there are some people in there that they're not day-to-day, you know, they don't know how to write the Java code, but they're still Java Champions because they help bring the Java community forward, right? And yeah. So you can be a Java champion without knowing how to compile Java code. Who cares about that? That's not actually what it means to be a part of a community, you know? And so I think that's probably fair about Jade Duchess. Is that true? Like you?
Yeah, I always say you don't have to be a programmer. You just have to be interested in programming.
There you go.
That's so if you, because especially I want to be open to beginners as well.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You can start somewhere.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The beginners are the biggest opportunity. You know, if you can get. right now, I feel like you know, I see more and more universities teaching JavaScript or Python. You know, and I it kills me because obviously Java is a great language and runtime and technology and. But we can't win the war of ideas if we're not where the people are, you know. So efforts like this that only grows, it only helps. It's the best we can do, best anybody could do for our community. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Where anything else I should we should mention before you know, where do people go? I'm just trying to make sure that they have, if they have one call to action, where do they go? Is it just to find you on Duchess Founder on Twitter?
I think that's the good way to go for the moment.
Okay, that's awesome. That's super cool. I'll be retweeting you every other day for a little while just to make sure I get as many of my people to see you and your awesome work. Thank you for your time. I know it's late. You're actually in the Netherlands, whereas yes. I'm sat in San Francisco in the States, and so you're up late to indulge me, and then I had the audacity to be late 15 odd plus minutes, and I'm so sorry about that. I know you're really busy. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. A Beautiful Podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email or at starbuxman on Twitter, where, of course, my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs's Them from Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs's Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license. I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.